And welcome, welcome, welcome to today's session of the Business App 2. I welcome you to this slightly cloudy, slightly moisture, not slightly humid, because the humidity is actually there in abundance. But wherever you find yourself, I do hope you are tuned in to your number one talk radio station, and this with your daily update of your Business App 2. We start off firstly with the excitement coming from the opening of today's, or for the next 2 days, the mining expo that's taking place here in the capital. For more, let's have a listen to this. Today, the 31st of August, sees the start of the long expected mining expo for 2022 that sees it come back in its physical form for the first time in 2 years. In 2020, there was no mining expo. For 2021, it was completely virtual, with much anticipation and excitement being displayed at the 2022 edition that is currently taking place at the Windhoek Showgrounds here in the capital, Windhoek. Today's session was opened by the Ministry of Mines and Energy, as well as also various other dignitaries and speakers. However, much of the discussion sees some new technologies come about, with a much emphasis being placed on the use or the allocation of energy, or the various kinds of extraction of minerals that can play a role in the energy production role. For that, Eagle FM spoke and also met up with the Namibia Uranium Association's Gabriel Schneider, who is the executive director of the Namibian Uranium Institute. Now, this also indicates towards much of Namibia's value and also Namibia's role in the global uranium production and also exporting. We have a listen to that discussion, followed by Mr. Rian van Rooyen, who is a representative of Headsprings Investments, who's also one of the local participating players in the local uranium production. For that, let's have a listen to these discussions.
Madam Schneider, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. If we are to look at, you know, the theme for this year's mining expo, firstly, what does it translate into the uranium industry itself? And, you know, what is the association's feeling with the theme itself about looking towards a post-COVID pandemic recovery process, if it is a recovery process or not, and anything extra?
Thank you for that question. Yeah, I think the theme of this year's expo is basically describing the feeling that we all have. We are all very glad to be able to speak of post-pandemic time. And while we were in the pandemic, people thought that it will take a very long time. And also, we see an upswing in almost all the mineral markets. So the feeling is very positive. We are very happy, and we think we can start building this industry to rise to further heights. I must, however, mention that even during the pandemic, I mean, the government granted the mining industry a status that they could continue to operate. So we have also made our contribution during the pandemic. But as I already said, mineral markets are looking positive, and you said what our association's feeling is. Obviously, we concentrate on uranium, and I think the uranium space is very interesting at the moment. We have seen quite a tremendous price increase, and at the moment, price is hovering in the high 40s. Some of the projects that we have still need a little bit more, but general predictions, because of the worldwide trend when it comes to nuclear, general feelings are that the price will continue to rise, and that will really see Namibia producing more uranium. We have already been the second largest producer of uranium in the world last year, so that there's huge potential. With the turmoil that we see in Europe and the associated problems surrounding gas, we also see an increase in the acceptance of nuclear power generation. generation in some countries like Germany, for example.
That was going to be my next question, yeah.
Did not look so good, but there was a recent opinion poll where 68% of the people that were asked were actually in favor of continuing with nuclear power and not stopping nuclear together.
Madam Schneider, just on that question, in terms of the perspectives that people had about nuclear energy, recently it has looked that there is going to be this, you know, there's some like debate about is it the best, is it the cleanest, in terms of just allaying fears that these some perspectives might have generated for nuclear. What can you add in terms of that? If people had to look at, you know, it's an energy that is there. It can provide almost unlimited resource of energy. What can we as Namibia, how do we play into that role?
Well, the fear people have about nuclear energy is based basically on two issues. One, it's the accidents, the famous accidents of Chernobyl and more recently Fukushima. And then, of course, also the fear of what do we do with the nuclear waste. But while people were breeding their fears, obviously technology didn't stop and there are lots of new developments. And I think the reactors that are built today are much, much more safe than the older ones. And we must also take into consideration, yes, we had these two accidents. However, as we speak, 440 nuclear power plants are producing nuclear energy. Clean, reliable, all over the world. So, and they have been doing so for the last three decades. So actually, while if something happens, it is a big story, but you must also take into consideration that lots of nuclear power plants are operating very well.
And then lastly, Madam Schneider, before I let you go, if we had to look at the Namibia's abundance of energy sources, that's now competing the uranium, the oil, renewable energy, and in the future, the hydrogen component. What does it look like for Namibia if we had to look at that landscape of, you know, that, if I can say, endowed in resources, how does it look like for Namibia?
Well, I think we should not talk about competition of these various energy sources, because for each and every country, there is an ideal energy mix. And obviously in Namibia, solar has a big role to play. I'm not so much convinced about the wind, to be honest, because I think that all the energy and the raw materials that need to go into the windmills, that's a bit of a downside, and also the environmental impacts. But solar has a role to play, there cannot be any doubt. And obviously, as we're trying to move away from fossil fuels, one needs to see how this mix can best be established. And our government has already, a couple of years ago, actually tasked the Ministry of Mines and Energy to look into the opportunities of nuclear, because we always belabor the point that we are producing minerals and we just export them without any value addition. So being the second largest producer of uranium, raises the questions why we are not using nuclear power. Of course, this is a much more complex issue. It's a huge investment, and we need the capacity to do that. And conventional power plants, nuclear power plants, have also produced a range of power that our national grid would possibly not be able to handle. But with the advent of the small modular reactors, I think this is something we can think about.
Madam Schneider, I'd like to thank you. Obviously, I would have loved to have more of your.
Now, from that discussion from the Namibia Uranium Association, from the representative there, we talked to one of the players. And as mentioned, this is Mr. Rian van Rooyen, who is one of the representatives from Head Springs Uranium. Let's have a listen to this.
Good morning, Rian. I think worldwide, there's a move towards clean energy. And it has been proven that radio nuclear power is a very clean source of power. It it's also known that in the world there is now scarcity of power. So I think there is a race worldwide to obtain uranium. We cannot see the uranium price increases. So Namibia is very fortunate in the sense that we've got really good uranium ore bodies and so on. So let's bring investment, just to maybe give some background. Let's bring investment. Is 100% owned by Uranium One, which is then owned by Rosatom, the Russian Atomic Energy Agency. So they've been doing exploration, so it's a desk research since 2010. They realized that in the area where we have our big hills, they have to be uranium, and they were quite lucky that they got the ore body quite fast. So the ore body is not big. It doesn't carry huge. It's actually narrow. It's 100 to 150 meters wide, and it's about 8 to 10 meters thick. But it is enough uranium to deliver about 3,000 tons per year for a period of 20 to 25 years. So you can just imagine the development around it, socio-economic, otherwise, should this mine go ahead. But at the same time, we have to also be transparent and honest to say there's still a lot of data outstanding. So we only in the exploration phase where we do core drilling, and that's how we find the uranium. It's not through leaching or other ghost stories. It's a well-known process. Then thereafter, we want to apply for test mining. Obviously, all new EIA, all the documents must be in place. Definitely, we want to stick to the legal framework. But it's a small area, it's 15 by 15 meters. That's the test mine. And for the first, let's say, 6 to 8 months, we just search a little water because you want to understand exactly the behavior of the water underground. Because remember, the sensitive recovery method is new in Africa, but it has been done for 50 years in Kazakhstan already. So anyone has got a lot of experience about that. But even so, you need to get the correct data. So if your data then shows that you can continue with that test mining, you use something like food coloring, which is not poisonous. You make sure that your monitoring borals, if you get to your monitoring borals any coloring, then you've got a problem, you don't have a closed system. If you don't get any, then obviously you can create a closed system. And this is crucial to the success of mining in this way, in the in-situ recovery way.
And then just if we had to look at the global uranium platform, I don't want to say the industry because it obviously includes a lot of aspects. If we had to look at the proponent of Namibia's value in this, obviously there seems to be a new focus in terms of the energy provision. Do you perhaps also see, Mr. Van Rijn, how Namibia can position itself as one of these key role players, especially in uranium?
Yeah, for sure. The advice from us would be that the government must make sure that they keep large stakes in these uranium mines, not your 3%,
4%, 10%.
Yeah, 4-8%. They must ensure that they are basically shareholder of that, shareholder of reference, if you want to call that now. And then they can position themselves. So with this mine, should this mine open up, we will probably move from, I think, 9 or 7 in the world in uranium producing countries. We can move up to 3 or 4, three or two. Now, that's significant if you talk about that. But again, the government shouldn't just, and that's my advice to the government,
please correct.
My advice would be, make sure that you're shareholder of reference, and not only rely on the tax to be paid. Make sure that you have got a stake in it. Make sure that you can have full oversight of every uranium producer mine in Namibia. And that doesn't go for uranium companies only. I would say, oil, copper, whatever it is. Make sure that you have always a shareholder of reference.
And then just before I let you go, Mr. Lloyd, if we were to look at the next 10 to 20 years, I'm going to ask you to be a weatherman, to be a forecaster. If we were to look at this, the change in energy, because my question to Madam Schneider was, Namibia is blessed with so much energy resources. You can be using oil fires to solar, the renewable wise solar and wind, and then you have uranium. Obviously, there's been Africa's only power station was Kumbe for a while. Now that unfortunately is some sort of maintenance issue. But the role of nuclear looks almost like the ultimate solution for clean energy. How do we factor into this if we're to do that?
Uranium One, their business model works. Although there's a state-owned company, they don't get any funds from the federal government in Russia. I can just point that out. So their business model is and how they must make their money as well. They explore for uranium, they mine the uranium, they enrich the uranium, they build a nuclear power plant, and they sell their electricity.
Yeah.
And that's basically how they make their money. Yes, they've got customers that also sell uranium itself from them, but most of they are generating the so we cannot promise it's going to happen in the future, but what we could look at is both a nuclear power plant in Namibia, obviously in the safe area, make sure that Namibians are trained, schooled, and educated to run it themselves. And you sign the agreement, and that's how Uranium One people in Russia explained it to me. You sign the agreement after 100 years, whatever it is, maybe they get rid of all waste. It's not being done anymore. You do it in Russia. So I think it's on the table, and I think it's open for negotiation and discussion. And we must just go ahead and be transparent about this whole process and how we can do it.
Ms. Van der Weyen, thank you very much. Thank you for the talk. I would have loved to tap more into your knowledge, but unfortunately we have to keep it there.
Now, as you heard there, in terms of the look at the uranium industry itself, it looks like good tidings. It looks like exciting stuff. But this gets us into our next item here on Your Business at 2, bringing us towards an insightful discussion with Eagle FM's in-house economic analyst, Kanjengo Kamkonyoka, just on the costs or the increasing costs of livestock or rearing of livestock. For more, let's have a listen to this report.
Yeah. Look, farming at the commercial level or even at the subsistence level, it's still a costly thing to do. And to enhance production or to increase your output, you need to supplement what nature has provided beyond just grazing. And knowing how dry our country is, farming with livestock actually need to be supplemented more with other things, if one has to produce at the level that they wish to. So now, given that component of the need to supplement your animals, let us focus on the cattle, on the cows. Now, given that component, let us say it's even could be a 60-40 or could be a 50-50. And in dry season, it could be a 70-30 even grazing to supplement. So if you look at this ratio of what a farmer needed to feed their animals, it shows that yes, for one to farm in Namibia, you really need to spend a lot of money to supplement your cattle or to supplement whatever livestock you are using. And now, Namibian Agricultural Union now, given the importance of this, of the agricultural sector or the livestock sector, they actually do combine an agricultural inflation index or an index which capture the inputs or what farmers actually need when they are farming with livestock. So they trace now the price of those inputs. And now, according to their latest now index, shows that the prices of input, whether it's animal feed, whether it's medication, whether it's the tractors that you are using in your farm, all those, the costs are going up. And at the current level, it's actually inflation, the agricultural inflation is at around, it's almost 20%. So meaning it's even above the food inflation, it's above the country inflation of goods and services. So that gives you a picture that it's actually becoming more expensive for you to raise a cattle or to raise a calf, because you need to buy the seeds. I mean, the feed. You need to buy whatever the urea. You need to buy whatever the yellow maize.
Mm.
And all those things are now which are actually experiencing higher inflation, which is making it actually very, very, very expensive, especially for those that are farming at a large scale or at a medium scale.
Exactly. Now,
sorry,
you can continue.
Yeah, and that is just now at the farm level. So we're not only tracking the prices to tell the farmers that the price are going up for yellow maize and for urea, but the main reason this is being done by now is also to tell the consumers that if the cost at the farm level goes up,
mm.
and the farmers are the ones that are producing raw material for beef production,
mm.
also expect the price of beef to go up in line with the production cost.
Exactly. That was going to be my next question in terms of that transference of costs. Because yeah. obviously the person always, or the people always finding the brunt of cost or the increases of costs is usually the consumer on the ground. Now, Kanjengo, if you had to look at that cost transference, has this been something that began at the beginning of this year with regards to the Ukraine conflict, if we can pull a link to there, or is it something actually that can be tracked further back, even into 2020, 2021, perhaps, or even before?
Definitely, Dwight. Definitely, because we are coming from that period of drought.
Mm.
So the whole of 2020, if you look, one of the inflation driver in 2020 was meat.
Mm.
And the fact that beef was expensive or was scarce, also the price of chicken went up, because the price of chicken even went up more crazier, because there were no alternative, because the beef, there were lack of animals for throughput. So this is actually coming from back then. We're supposed now actually to cool down after the farmers have actually recovered, and now we have plenty of animals. But unfortunately, that period could not be felt by consumers.
Mm.
Yes, we know now that our exporting abattoirs, the throughput have increased.
Mm.
And also exporting online, it have increased. But if you look at that impact, you know, it takes a bit of time for something to go to the market in some instances.
Yeah.
And the fact that we do not have a lot of butchers in our country, especially around beyond Windhoek and others, you find that there are few butchers at a larger scale. So we supposed to have a bit of a break to experience a break to experience affordable beef wherever or whatever class of your economy is supposed to experience that, because we have now enough throughput supposed to come because grazing have recovered.
Yeah.
But as I said earlier, Dwight, grazing or producing an animal in Namibia is just not about the grazing. It's a combination of animal feed. It's a combination of others, given the quality of grazing in our country.
Mm.
So unfortunately, grazing now is probably enough, but the supplement, because animals need to be supplemented, it's where now the problem is, where the cost are coming through. As I said, urea, which is quite very important. As I said, yellow maize, which is quite very important. And not only that, there are also machineries that are used in a farm.
Mm.
There are also other things that are medication that are given to the animals. Mm. And that is where things are actually where things are not going right.
Mm.
Yes, grazing is enough, but the animals needed to be supplemented because of the quality of the grazing of Namibia. And unfortunately, those supplements, medication and the food are the ones which are now expensive. And that break that we're supposed to have is now actually being eroded away by the cost of agricultural input.
Exactly. And, you know, Kanjengo, if we had to look at that, it sounds similar to an aspect of, you know, supply on one side being strained, because potentially we don't know how big the demand is. Or let me say in my term, or in my understanding with alongside our listeners, we know there is a demand, but how big is this demand, and how can this demand be supplied or be serviced? In terms of breaking that down, Kanjengo, what does it look like in terms of what you've observed?
Yeah, the demand is there. It's just that when people are talking about demand, you also need to zoom in. You also need to zoom in that the quality of demand that you have is, yes, people want to eat beef, people need protein. But you as a farmer, this is now the quality of the market. The farmer has to choose to which market is he going to supply, given the type of margin he's going to get. And that's why you see a bunch or a lot of our beef go to Norway, go to the European market because of the margin. And if you look at our internal abattoirs, that are just slaughtering for local market, they are the worst, man. I can tell you this. I just that I do not have my I do have my statistics, just that I haven't opened it. These guys, in terms of slaughtering in a month, a combination from the south to the north, I don't think it even ever go beyond 10% monthly. It doesn't go that far. So the demand is there, but it's about the producers where they choose to sell. Because remember, as I said, these guys are doing it at the commercial level and the cost of inputs are going up. So they are also being selective to which market should they supply. Unfortunately, those are the questions that they keep asking themselves. So if we look at the monthly butchering in Namibia, all butchers together, it never went beyond 4,000. On average, it's 2,700 cattle that get to be slaughtered for national consumption. And yes, luckily, thanks for the informal market that supplemented. Otherwise, this would not be enough. Namibian people, they love beef. It's just that the fact that they cannot afford it. And that's why most of the animals are not directed to local butchering, but they are more directed to winners, export, and also for beef for export. But the market is there. This is the market is now divided, depending on the income level and what the people are willing to pay. So the market is there. It's just that the cost of producing a cattle does not allow many farmers to supply to the butcher, so the butchers can slaughter for the a middle income person or the low income person. That is the unfortunate thing.
Exactly. Kanjengo, just in terms of the last question, I know we have to somewhat, you know, compartmentalize and also make it compact. I want to ask you to be a little bit of a weather person and also have a way up the various menu options in terms of animal protein that the Namibian consumer has at their disposal. If beef is being strained as much in terms of supply or even the production costs, you know, in terms of consumer trends and consumer moves, why are we not jumping more onto fish or onto pork or onto goat and mutton and even try to supplement it with some game? You know, because Namibia has this rich variety of animal protein. What's been some of the observations that you have noticed?
And this is the most beautiful thing, always, I say. As I came from the north yesterday, I always pass by and try to get some $50 biltong because that is how far you can get. Because the $30 is nothing when you come to biltong. You might even get two things. So the minimum you should pay for biltong is around 50 there, unless those that are weighted, that they have probably five pieces. This is one of the most beautiful observation I always keep making. As you said, we have quite a variety of protein producing things. But it's still, when it comes to meat in Namibia, is the most expensive thing. But we have quite a variety. If you look at the small scale production of chicken now, it's bumping up, it's coming. But in terms of reaching the market, there is a problem. Even now, pig farming, small scale guys are coming through. But still, we are unable to be at that level. I remember I did a piece that we go as far as Spain, as far as Netherlands to get just pig meat. That is how far we go. And for fish, it's even more interesting. That in Ombili here, where I live somewhere closer, two days or 3 days a whole, we can go without fish. In the fish market. So when it comes to meat here in Namibia, it's something which is quite puzzling because none of them we are able to produce at a larger scale. And actually we can. But if you look at the strategy page like what we did for chicken, we can ask ourselves, okay, you created an infant protection for one company. But this company volume, until now, it cannot, it doesn't reach the level which is required.
Yeah.
Then how come when we're supposed to start, we're supposed actually to say we're going to support a 3 or 4, and we will only support you if you're able to produce at this type of volume that will enable our people to afford. So our strategies are somehow which are actually hindering us to tap in some of this market. Like for chicken, there is a big potential because almost every small scale guy is trying. But until we supplemented them with our strategies, they will not reach such a level where they can now start to produce at a larger scale and lower their average cost. And when there is more competition, also the price go down. And when there's more innovation, more people coming through, also the price go down. But they require more assistance. It's the same thing for pig farming.
Yeah.
We have the land. We have the people that are willing. We just need to create a certain value chain within this market.
Yeah.
One produce the feed, the other one produce whatever. But we never actually really grasped captured this thing.
Yeah.
If we help a farmer to produce pig, then the farmer will come to say, there is no animal feed.
Yeah.
Because we only targeted the farmer to produce. But we forgot to supplement that. Okay, cool. You set up the animal feed so that the farmer come and buy from you. So the type of assistance we gave to the livestock sector is somehow not talking to each other. We are just jumping within the value chain.
Yeah.
We are just jumping. Or we can either go to the end or we are at the beginning. But within the between the two, we didn't really supplement. Because this thing needs to be cemented. The value chain needs to be cemented. So to your question is that, yes, that is why we cannot capture or fill in the gap.
Yeah.
Maybe for cattle might be difficult because they really, really need good grazing all the time. But for small livestock to supplement our protein, to enable our people to afford, it needs more extra effort along the whole value chain.
Exactly.
And for fish, fish is even more weird. It's more interesting again. It's like beef. We opted to sell where the margin are coming from. We sell our fish to Zambia. We sell our fish to DRC. We sell our fish to Ghana. And those are now the basic ones. Just them as banger.
Yeah.
Those are just them as banger. Because it's where we are getting a bit of a more margin compared to domestic.
Yeah.
So now we somehow, to a certain extent, just like for beef, we deprive the local market, not because we hate them. It's just remember the cost, the production is too much. So I'm going to opt for a market where I'm going to pay rewarded more. So we now need internally, we need either to come up with measures to subsidize either the price and convince these producers to sell either their beef locally or their fish, more fish locally. Otherwise, that will not happen because remember, a farmer or a producer or an investor is a rational person. They are doing it to get as much as possible from it. And if there is nothing, they say, why are you not selling local? No, they will tell you, I'm going to sell where I get more money and to make sure that I do not run over just producing for peanuts.
Exactly.
So unfortunately, that's why most of us cannot afford either protein, even though we have variety or a number of protein sources that are available, as you indicated.
Now that brings us up to the end of today's program of Business at 2. Stay tuned for the rest of your programming here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Also, catch me later on tonight on the Business and Economic Zone, the BEZ, for our continuation of the Wednesday session. On that note, stay tuned and catch me a bit later.